Welcome to the People's Game, another phenomenal day of football in Brazil, and today we have a packed show. In just a little while, we're going to hear a more involved, engaged, and detailed, analytical, and brilliant analysis from our soccer comics, who we heard from yesterday. Well, we have them in a unique long form today. But before that, Melissa Figueroa, my co-host, will join me, and we'll talk about today's action and look forward to tomorrow's. But even before then, we're going to go to DJ Namdi of KPFK Radio, a Nigerian and a fan of the Super Eagles, who won today. But we're going to start out with Leo Messi, who proved a godlike spirit in injury time to defeat a heroic Iran.
Argentina, 45 minutos, gol, carajo, gol, te lo grito a vos, te lo grito a vos de nuevo que está ahí abajo, eu tenho un papa, vos no tenés nada, vos tenés Pelé, vos tenés pan de azúcar, eu tenho un papa, Francisco está conmigo desde el Vaticano, tirame Pelé. Tengo a Messi, tengo a Francisco, 46, Lionel se enchufó. A veces la gente merece tener su fe recompensada, a veces la gente se merece más, y lo hizo Lionel, y estoy llorando, carajo, y no me importa porque ganamos. Gracias Messi, gracias Argentina, carajo.
Yes, the game Argentina versus Iran was very, very tough. Iran was remarkable, I have to say, was absolutely incredible with their defense. That coach is absolutely amazing. And I think that's definitely, I saw it coming, you know, from the Bosnia game, that the way to be able to dishevel the Argentine team is to definitely pressure them, get physical, and get the defense, you know, to stop them. So they had the whole entire team playing in defense, which was really smart, because Argentina couldn't break through. They couldn't find a way to break through the wall of steel that Iran had going up. I think it's really an important game, especially because Iran did such a great job, and it's important for them to come out like this, letting the world know that they, well, their style of playing, how unrelentless they are. And also, in a global sense, I think, you know, right now, economically and what's happening in the borders of Iraq, I think definitely Iran is coming to the light in that sense, in the world of soccer, is stepping their game up here. Yeah, I want to give it up to the goalies. I think that they're really, really on both sides of Iran and Argentina did a great and tremendous job. Romero, any chance that Iran had for any chances to advance in their offense definitely was blocked by the brilliance of the World Cup superstar that is Romero. You know, I was really concerned with about what it would be like for our goalie, but actually I am the most excited and ecstatic I've ever been, I think, in a very, very long time, since like 1991, and been, you know, very, very happy with the Romero's rise to the challenge. Of course, I was definitely like, like, you know, just thinking about Messi. And of course, you know, like, it was like such a long time. We're just building up this intense, incredible. I have no patience. So I was just waiting. And I kept thinking, you know, maybe, you know, right here, any second, like, we keep thinking that any second they might get through. And finally, when it came through to Messi and he looked, and I knew it was about to happen because he calculated that split second. It was just so, to me, it's just so fine of a line of that, like, millisecond. And that moment that it went in and just dropped the ball within me, like, it just completely, just finally, the goal of the decade came, like, the for me was what made me go, okay, now, if the team is not inspired to rise as a team to play together now, I don't know whatever else it will take for them to be a team working together like Iran worked together, because Iran has themselves. Like, they had a team that knew how to read each other. They knew how to do things together simultaneously in a beautiful dance of defense. And I felt that Argentina, you know, really needs to get together as a team, figure out what they need to change in a strategy to be able to face another very strong defense and physical team against this really highly defensive Argentinian team. That it does remind me of 1986 Maradona, now thinking of the time the team that Bilardo had going on. But this particular goal that Messi did definitely made me see the light, that what if possible. That moment is just like just brought me to my knees, and I knew that calling on the prayers and knowing that there is this beautiful soccer that could come out of this. There is some beautiful play that, and a beautiful goal that could be scored by Messi, and it happened. And it happened at the very last moment. Like, all of the prayers that of the Argentine people and those that were our allies just answered in that very split second. It was beautiful. One thing I think I would like to contribute to the Argentine squad is if Saavedra would definitely let me do some viewpoints with them, because I think, like, I could do some choreography, dance, viewpoints with the team to really get them to focus and strategize in those moments, think together as a team when they're met with any blocks and any penetration they're trying to get into the main area of action, which was missing. So I really think that in those moments, for them to rise to the occasion and follow through and really attack, I think they need me. I think that, you know, I can come in, you know, do some viewpoints with them. Guys, let's work together. Let's rely on what we can create, this team mind together. So I think I was very happy with the last-minute changes that Saavedra did, and I think that definitely opened it up for Argentina to have that possibility. So I was very happy about that. So we'll see if my patience will grow. So I'm just going to pray for patience now as I continue to see Argentina rise as a World Cup leading team that could possibly turn things around. I mean, they have time, and that's what they're banking on. I really do think Saavedra knows that they have the time to figure out how they're going to do this together, this Rubik's Cube of a team that needs to be put together very fastly. And this is the kind of World Cup I love, because we see that the team has this road. Will they be able to rise to it is the question. And I think this time more than ever, I do see the possibility with the style of playing that Argentina is very famous for. So there's a lot more to say, especially about the penalty that's not given to Iran and the referee, and because that was very hard. And I think it was Mascherano is very well known for me to I know him to get very upset. He gets to be kind of a very dangerous player, you know, in those particular moments. So it's pretty dangerous. I think, you know, what the bomb could be in Argentina is these, you know, not having the patience, not having with these players that has shown, you can see their weaknesses either in the defending and getting physical and getting upset and frustrated with what's happening on the team in the plays, and also what's not happening. So it adds up to the frustration, and allowing them to not be precise in their attack when they have the chances of their attack. They're just all over the place, completely disarmed them. They completely made them disheveled, and hopefully they learned a little bit of a Jedi mind ability. Hopefully they can listen to their inner Yoda. So that's what I hope. Well, in there, yes, we finally saw in that very moment, that miraculous moment that Messi was able to bring out, I saw the apparition, the light, and I'm a believer again in this possibility, in this team, and Messi bringing it together, like kind of like Maradona did. I do see it a little bit. Definitely saw the light. It was like I have a spiritual awakening again in this team, and I really hope that it does the same for the rest of the squad. to bring it.
The words of performance artist Karen Anzoátegui, as you heard, a diehard Argentina fan, and Karen will be traveling to Brazil on July 1st, hopeful, of course, that Argentina is still alive at that time, and she'll be filing reports from Brazil for the People's Game. Up next, we're going to hear from DJ Namdi, a Nigerian ecstatic at the victory of the Super Eagles today, 1-0 over Bosnia. This is the People's Game, and I am now talking with KPFK's DJ Namdi, who is Nigerian and a huge supporter of the Nigerian national team over the years, and a great day for Nigeria. Your thoughts on today's match and what this victory means for the people of Nigeria.
Alan, we've always said the Super Eagles play what we call Tylenol football. Tylenol football is after the game, you take 2 pills of Tylenol because of goals missed, you know.
Oh, wow.
The chances missed. So yeah. Today it was hard for me to watch the game because I know I will end up with a headache because chances. But it was a big game for Nigeria. Nigeria has been in the news for the past 1 month. I mean, every day there's killings, you know. There's only one thing that unites the whole country, both at home and abroad in the diaspora. It is soccer. We don't joke with our Super Eagles. You can be Boko Haram killing your community, shooting up everybody. But when it comes to soccer, the Super Eagles, you stop. But one thing that really pained us recently, where they go to, the Boko Haram, go to the viewing centers where people are watching soccer,
right,
and they kill them.
Right.
This never happened before.
Right.
So we're going through a very, very difficult period. And this win today means a lot for the whole country. A loss will have been a big loss.
Right. Well, they're in a great position now. They play Argentina. Argentina knows they've advanced, but they're Argentina. They'll probably try to win.
Well, the Argentina I saw Saturday morning is beatable.
Yes, no, that is true. No, their result was almost the same as Nigeria's against Iran. It took one moment from Leo Messi, and that was all they had.
And if I'm the coach of Argentina, I will rest Messi.
The words of KPFK's DJ Namdi. Well, I'm joined now by my co-host, Melissa Figueroa. And boy, Melissa, do I have to eat my words from yesterday's show. As I was saying that I thought today was going to be maybe not one of the more exciting days of the 2014 World Cup. And boy, right off the bat, was I proven wrong. As Iran, hey, look, I like Leo Messi. I like Argentina. I couldn't be happier about the, you know, to get to think about Diego Maradona every World Cup cycle, and especially with Messi and his sort of, you know, father-son dynamic of whether he'll be able to, you know, reach the greatness of Maradona. So we get to consider Maradona every time Messi performs. And so I like Leo Messi, but boy, 15 minutes into this match and my heart was with Iran. What a heroic performance by the Iranians. It's hard not to think of that in some kind of broader geopolitical context, the significance of, you know, in the great international people's game for a country like Iran to challenge at the highest level for its men's national soccer team. We've probably all heard quite a bit about just the fanaticism of Iranian fans. Maybe many of the listeners of the People's Game are also familiar with some of the issues that have surrounded Iran and its women's team's relationship to FIFA, as well as the relations of women soccer players in Iran to the men's game. But Iran, the men's national team today, so heroic. It got past the 90-minute mark. I really then thought, my word, this is a phenomenal historical performance by Iran. They were alive in the tournament. They looked solid. Yes, they played in a defensive shell, parking the bus, so to speak, but they had a few fantastic efforts on the Argentinian goal. In fact, in many respects, the best chances of the game. And then Mr. Messi, as if it all was just a stage for him at this one moment to finally at the World Cup stage. Yes, he scored in the last match, but this was something that, again, gets him closer to a place in the permanent pantheon of all-time soccer greats to perform at the World Cup on this stage with that kind of thing that we heard, the ecstasy it provides for fans like Karen. Your thoughts on Iran-Argentina, Mel?
Wow. Yeah, what an amazing match. One of my favorite tweets from during that match was one from Farmer Jones, who said, "I hope the neocons are paying attention to just how hard it is to successfully attack Iran." And that's absolutely true. They played magnificently. The goalkeeper played magnificently. It was a really, really interesting match, even though it was 0-0 right up until the very end. You know, Argentina, as I said yesterday, as a whole unit, again, didn't play as stellar as maybe some people expected them to perform again this World Cup. But then, you know, I was thinking, it was like the way Argentina's been playing in these last two games, it's kind of like, you know, 90 minutes of good but unremarkable football and then 17 seconds of absolute brilliance from Messi. I mean, what a goal. That was amazing. It was right at the end in stoppage time. It was, again, one of those moments for the ages. And like you said, a great moment and a great entry for Messi and a great vote for him to be in the pantheon of all-time world greats.
And if I can say, you know, we write about this in the part of our article that will be published on Truthdig at the top of the upcoming week, where, you know, what does soccer mean to people? And there was an image of one of the Argentinian fans. And by the way, Argentina was playing very close to the Argentinian border today in southern mm-hmm. Brazil. But this was, I think, at the fan zone in Copacabana, and they showed, or maybe it was even in Buenos Aires. Anyway, the ESPN feed showed a woman and the whole crowd of people, but the woman who was on the right side of the screen was just in ecstasy at the goal. I mean, she screamed and let out just a cry of pure ecstatic joy, and the whole, you know, they stayed on her for like 8 seconds, and when they cut away, she was still immersed in it. And so this is an example of football really providing a level of ecstasy that matches for a really truly heartfelt experience of people, you know, our fellow human souls in our time and that we mm-hmm. live in, that people experience from football an ecstasy that is really equal to any form of human ecstasy. And this was Messi again delivering on the promise that recalls the genius of Maradona. A genius that to Argentinians and football fans around the world is something transcendent, something mm-hmm. that is people associate with the divine and again with the ecstatic. So it was an incredible, incredible moment at the end of a match. And again, it was the greatness of the Iranian team, which I'm sure they're licking their wounds. They're upset about the result. They're upset about letting in that goal. But it was their greatness that set the table for that spectacular moment of ecstasy. And the other matches today were also incredible. The Nigerian-Bosnian match was great for Nigeria getting a result. They played marvelously. There was probably a blown call in the first half that went against Bosnia. And Bosnia had two of their maybe four best chances in the whole game in injury time, both from Edin Dzeko. And the Nigerian goalie, the final save he made to knock the ball against the post was spectacular. So the very final effort Dzeko had. So very dramatic there. Bosnia seemed to be, again, a little bit like the Italian team in the second half, running in quicksand. The heat and humidity had gotten to them. Nigeria now is sitting with 4 points, two behind Argentina. Bosnia is eliminated in Iran, still alive with 1 point, and it'll be interesting to see how Argentina approaches Nigeria and also how Bosnia approaches Iran, with Iran still alive, but Nigeria very close to moving on to the next round. And then the middle match was, again, just phenomenal. So, boy, Mel, do I have to eat my words. Ghana was great, and Germany looked vulnerable, but they also, unlike Italy and unlike Spain and unlike England, they showed enough to come from behind, not win the match like Holland did coming behind from Australia, but against a Ghana team that played quite brilliantly, Germany was able to, you know, again, with the great goal poacher, Klose, getting the tying goal, and just a phenomenal, phenomenal second half. Your thoughts on the second and third matches from today?
Wow, all I have to say is the Axé is strong in Brazil. You know, of course, Brazil has the largest African descendant population outside of Africa. Many of this population's ancestors came over as slaves from West Africa, from present-day Ghana and Nigeria. And boy, I have to say, the Orishas are smiling on their children playing in the Americas today and for their children in Brazil who have suffered so much, because Ghana and Nigeria with stellar performances. Ghana tied Germany, but to tie Germany, one of the most heavily favored teams, one of the greatest teams in this tournament was absolutely spectacular. I said yesterday, you know, how there are those periods of time, those like 10, 20 minute stretches where all of the goals are made and it's almost like a conversation between the two teams. That's exactly what we saw again today. And then, you know, once Klose scored that goal, which is also his 15th World Cup goal, which puts him at a record tied up there with the great Brazilian Ronaldo Fenomeno for all-time World Cup goals. And then he did that amazing somersault. So he's good at gymnastics as well as soccer, I guess. And it was amazing. And then the last half hour, 20 minutes of that match was just this absolutely tense back and forth, back and forth. I mean, it was amazing. So the matches were amazing to watch. I must mention, though, on a more somber and very critical note, that it was very, very awful and disgusting to see about 15 fans show up to the Germany versus Ghana match in blackface. They had handwritten the word Ghana on plain white t-shirts, and they were clowning around, and people were lining up to take photos of them. That's an absolutely disgusting display of racism. I also want to mention that at the Switzerland versus France game yesterday, there were fans who showed up in blackface. These are absolutely unacceptable. Acceptable expressions of racism, and unfortunately the type of racism that is so rampant in contemporary football. And it's also very shameful that FIFA has, you know, for all of its no to racism campaigning that they've done over the last few years, to suddenly be silent on this issue. And not only that, you know, the fact that these fans were not ejected from the games, and yet other vendors and Brazilian vendors have been ejected from the game for promoting the wrong brand of product, is absolutely shameful on FIFA's part. And it absolutely needs to get called out, and it needs to be put in the spotlight just as much as these incredible matches.
Very well put, Mel. And indeed, FIFA claims to be fighting racism, and for them to be silenced on this is, again, disgusting and one of the pointed and significant contradictions about this ridiculous organization that, you know, puts on the spectacle. The games are there for us to see. The feeds, they control. There are elements of what they do that are marvelous. You know, as with any institution that has many things that it does well, but in this case, so many things that they do wrong. You know, as Dave Zirin says, it's really time to scrap FIFA, take up what they're doing correctly. And, you know, there's no way this institution has the capacity to responsibly address so many things because at their very core, they just have it all wrong.
We must take over the means of distribution of the game.
Put beautifully again, Mel. Thank you very much. Well, looking forward to tomorrow's matches, we have Belgium versus Russia, which should be a very interesting match. Russia played what seemed to be a very contained and conservative game. Of course, the goaltender had a horrible mistake, even worse than Casillas as well. Maybe the Van Persie ball taken off his foot, that or this was the worst mistake in the tournament so far. And then Belgium, again, had to fight back against Algeria, but they did. They're favored in the group. Russia will hopefully play with a little bit more spark than they did against South Korea and challenge the Belgians. It shall be interesting. And then we have Algeria, who moved ahead of Belgium but lost the game, put up a great fight against Belgium. And they played South Korea, which again seems like, you know, a side that could possibly go deep in the tournament because it just seems like they can play with anybody. And we'll see that what that match produces and see which teams come out of these two matches in good position to move on to the second round. And of course, we're in the United States of America. And yes, tomorrow's game against Portugal is a big, 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 big game in the history of American soccer. United States, following the result of the tie between Ghana and Germany, sits in a position where if they defeat Portugal, which by the way they did in 2002, commencing their best ever run in the World Cup where they ended up in the quarterfinals, if they defeat Portugal, they will advance to the second round and Cristiano Ronaldo and Portugal will be eliminated. Now, I have not proven to be a particularly adept prognosticator in this World Cup. I don't know who could have been. It's been so many surprising results, but I cannot imagine, even missing some of their key players, as Portugal are, that Ronaldo is not going to take the bull by the horns tomorrow against a non-veteran U.S. side. Now, whether he'll succeed, that I don't know. I don't know how to assess the American team and a lot of its younger players. I haven't seen them enough. They obviously played exceptional defense for 75 minutes of the game against Ghana. Can they hold down the fort with a player of Cristiano Ronaldo having to bring his A-plus game? Because right now he is, and he dreams of performing brilliantly on the World Cup stage. He is facing elimination before his third match in this match against the USA. So a very dramatic stage for the United States men's team and for Cristiano Ronaldo and Portugal. Your thoughts about all three matches tomorrow, Mel?
Yeah, so starting with the USA versus Portugal, of course, all the pressure is on Cristiano Ronaldo, not just because Portugal is facing elimination, but because, of course, the international rivalry, like on the club stage with his fellow superstar Messi, is also in the balance. Messi now has had two absolutely magnificent moments, and Ronaldo is currently at zero. So he's definitely trying to catch, not just win the game for Portugal, but perhaps catch some glory for himself as well. And, of course, the USA, look, this is proven to be a World Cup where all we can expect is to expect the unexpected, and again, we've seen these veteran sides like Spain. It hasn't been a good tournament for Iberia so far, so who knows what will happen tomorrow. Of course the USA's John Brooks and his first World Cup match, picking up that goal for the USA, so anything can happen. I must also, in terms of prognosticating, mention of course the World Cup tradition of certain ocean creatures predicting matches. Last time around in 2010, we had Paul the Octopus, who apparently had 100% prediction record, and he unfortunately died a few years ago, but apparently for 2014 we have Clam the Psychic Clam.
That's a great name.
Yeah. Clam the Psychic Clam has reportedly picked the United States to win tomorrow. So let's see if the Great Clam is right. For the other matches, South Korea versus Algeria might prove very, very interesting. Historically, root for Algeria because of the great Zinedine Zidane. And of course, it's storied and very political history. But South Korea has proven to be quite a cohesive side this time around. So let's see what happens. Belgium and Russia, the same thing too. Hopefully the Russian goalkeeper can do some great saves to paper over that flub that he did a few days ago. But all three actually should prove rather interesting.
Well, and we shall see about it. So now we're going to go to something special again. Yesterday we had the introduction on the People's Game of the Soccer Comics, and today we have an extended conversation with all three. All new material from Matt Kirshen, Mike Bridenstine, and Ryan Connor. This is The People's Game, and I am joined now, as you can hear in the background with the laughter, by the Soccer Comics, who we've brought in to KPFK for some interviews. We have Matt Kirshen, who is a fan of England. We have Mike Bridenstine, who is the fan of the United States of America. And the Netherlands are represented by Ryan Connor. Again, I say the depressed fan in England, the delusional fan in the USA,
happy fan
in Holland. And I want to start right off the bat with I'm very familiar with English comedy. I'm very familiar with American comedy. Don't know much about Dutch comedy.
I'm actually doing a show a run of shows, a weekend in Amsterdam at a comedy club called Tumla in 2 weeks' time, which is actually going to clash with the finals, which is going to be...
Oh, no.
If the Netherlands make it to the finals, then there will be no... We might as well just call off the gig.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I love about the Dutch? The Dutch were playing Australia. You had the most crazy outfits and partying crowd maybe ever gathered in the history of football when you have and happy, upbeat, middle class. This is like the social democratic vision of utopia. People on holiday.
Just big orange dresses and like people are wearing bicycles as shirts and stuff like that.
It reminds me of the Blackadder episode where they're drinking.
I have seen that episode.
Right. And that's what the Dutch fans remind me of. How do they arrive at this getup? Just sort of insane. But again, my first question is I don't imagine that there's a large body of American comedy related to soccer, but in England, with the great English comic tradition, besides the Philosopher's soccer match in Monty Python, you know, we Yankees maybe are not familiar with this because soccer just doesn't get imported into the United States. So what are the great traditions of soccer comedy in England, if
they
exist?
I don't know. I think it's more topical pop culture jokes. Like, yeah, like if I were in Britain right now doing comedy shows, there would be people who have jokes about the game that's just happened and about, like, when something mm-hmm. big happens, someone will have a bit about it. In the same way that in America, if something remarkable happens in NFL, people have jokes about it. People have jokes about the bigger, like, the better known footballers, basketball, like NBA guys. So it's that. It's like, it's the main sport. It's the biggest sport.
And right now in England, do you think there's just widespread despair, or was this team, the expectations were so low?
I don't know. It'll be interesting because I'm going to be back in London next week and I'll be able to get a better feel for how people are reacting. But my impression, just from hearing, like from seeing Facebook posts and various friends talking about it, is this year felt like a transition year for the team. Like, it was a really young team, so there were much lower expectations, and it was like, oh, well, you know, we'll give it a shot. England always goes in, like, I've never quite got to grips with exactly, it's very impressive the way England sort of, England fans hold two contradictory notions simultaneously. And the England fans go into the competition convinced that it's going to be a disaster, we're going to wipe out, but also we're definitely going to win.
Like, yeah,
That's the England, that's the England fans' mentality, where somehow both those ideas are, it's like our version of the Holy Trinity. How can it be Father? So it's Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, but it's also the same person. Isn't that contradictory? Like, that England's paradox is that. Like, so we're definitely the worst team there, but we're also definitely going to win.
It's biblical. Angry. Like, how did you not win? How did you not win the cup?
How did this team that we've been slagging off for the last year and a half not demolish these other world-class players? That's what kind of happens.
And do you think maybe that has a little... Do you think that still stems from the legacy of inventing the sport somewhat? Or
I think there's a feeling... It comes from having sort of originated it and having won it once 50 years ago. And then also having... And the other thing is obviously the Premier League. At the club level, a lot of the best players in the world and a lot of the strongest teams in the world by quite some way are like in the UK. But a large number of those players are not English. So that's what happens. You get this idea that English football is phenomenal. But then when the World Cup happens, they all put on their own country's jerseys and, in one particular case, knock England out with two goals yesterday.
Well, they still all dress like your young men used to dress in the 19th century to also.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other trouble, wearing, like, the heavy shoes and the top hat. That's really slowing us down. You try and, like, a lot of, you know, nowadays there's a lot of quick turns and pacing and sidesteps. And when your fob watch is swinging wildly when you try and turn. It's just, it's
chasing a wheel with a stick.
It's hard to take a header on a set piece when you're wearing a tri-corner hat.
Yeah, then your chimney sweep brush, it all gets in the way.
I mean, the expectations are always high for the English. They have a lot of great players, but to look at it like an NBA analogy, they have a lot of Dwayne Wade's and Chris Bosh's, but not really any LeBron's, except Rooney, but he doesn't really... Gerard was that level several years ago, but it's a bunch of great supporting players.
Right, and by the way, I thought the central defense, Terry's better than both those guys still. And you get situations where players drop out like that. By the way, I thought they really missed Theo Walcott. I really did. I think Raheem Sterling is fine, but Walcott being able to be out on the wing and the way he can cut in off the wing.
He's a more rounded player at this point.
Yeah. Big loss.
By the way, I would argue that there's an American soccer comedy tradition, and it's since 94 about, which is just to make fun of it. And to act like it's stupid, it's foreign, and who cares, which is, I've noticed a lot of that from The Tonight Show, from... You know, different shows. It's kind of like, who cares, right, everyone?
And then really, this year, that's going on this year.
I blogged about this, but I was watching Real Time with Bill Maher, and he's like, "I know why you're all happy. You all have World Cup fever. And how exciting is it to watch Paraguay play an Eastern Bloc nation you've never heard of to a scoreless draw?" And then
it's also a right wing trope, though, too. They attack it.
Lazy. Yeah. That's
because the world likes the world's stupid.
It's such a
foreigners, right?
It's such a hack joke. Paraguay is not in the World Cup. right. and all of the Eastern Bloc countries in it, you know.
Yeah.
yeah and
You've
then,
heard of them.
And you Croatia. Actually do watch, like, today, where France beat Switzerland 5-2.
Right.
Yeah.
In a ridiculous
There's
there,
a lot
there have
of
been two scoreless draws in this cup, and one of them was an incredible game.
The Iran one, not so much.
That was not the best game.
But Mexico is fantastic.
There was a third one.
Oh, that's
boring,
right.
right. Another pretty slow one.
Oh, that's Greece right.
yeah,
and...
Yeah, Greece, Japan.
Yeah.
But very few, yeah.
As someone, like, I think Ryan particularly is, like, a huge soccer fan. I'm someone who, I'm very much a fair weather fan. Like, I get into it for the big events.
Mm-hmm.
Like, World Cup is when I, okay, now I'm a fan. But watching that Brazil-Mexico game was that for a 0-0 draw, that was exhilarating.
Riveting.
That was like, it was so.
Yeah, it was incredible.
It was so close. It was basically Mexico hanging on by the skin of their teeth, just mm-hmm. deflecting chance after chance and holding
Neymar
tight.
Neymar versus Ochoa, let's see.
Yeah,
let's
it was
see what
really
happens.
Exciting.
Yeah.
And it's a real result. Like, to hold Brazil to a scoreless draw was a huge result for them. So it was very mm-hmm. exciting right up to the final whistle.
So I suppose in England now, you won't have these nights where you have 60% of the televisions are watching one event because England's not playing in them, but it'll still be followed madly because so many players are in the EPL, right?
Well, yeah, but also they'll still watch it. Like, it's definitely for the England games, the streets would be empty and... Good luck trying to, like, it's death for comedy as well. That's the one thing that really puts, like, my one big negative about the World Cup is all my friends back in England who are trying to run comedy shows and gearing up for the Edinburgh Festival, trying to get people out to see their previews. And if there's an England game on, just no, there just will not be a show that night.
What about if, just say it's just Chelsea-Arsenal. Is it hard to get people out to a show?
No, not really. I mean, it definitely affects numbers on the bigger game. But during the season, there's games all the time,
yeah.
constantly,
yeah.
particularly on the weekends. And also, like, say Chelsea-Arsenal, mm-hmm. that's two big London teams, mm-hmm. but there's three other big London teams.
Right.
So even if you're a Londoner, there's a good chance your team isn't playing in that game and you're not that bothered.
Right.
So London's a pretty big town then.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. I haven't counted them all yet, but there's over 100 people. And I'm not even kidding.
I always picture it like a Morgantown, West Virginia kind of place.
Mountains and coal miners.
So Dutch football comedy, the tradition.
Oh, I'm sure that it must exist there.
I'm sure it exists.
It has to exist there.
I mean, it's a huge part of Dutch culture.
Although, most of the comedy there is in English, right?
No, they have...
Or the shows wrote, they kind of flip-flop, right?
Their English is sufficiently good that they can bring...
Isn't Tom English Rhodes speaking. Huge there?
Tom Rhodes mm-hmm. had a TV show in Holland at mm-hmm. one point, and I played the Netherlands quite a few times. I've done gigs over there. And their English is sufficiently good that you can do a gig and it works and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But still, if a Dutch comedian is playing to a Dutch audience, they will speak Dutch
mm-hmm.
as a general, unless it's like a special event for some reason.
Now, am I mistaken in saying the most famous Dutch person in the world right now is their Robin Van Persie and Iron Robin, maybe with Johan Cruyff number 3, right? The most famous Dutch people in the post-World War II period.
And so Van Basten.
Are the soccer players.
Yeah, it's got to be those four.
Right.
I mean, I can't think of... I mean, the only other person I would put up there would be Hullet, who is also a player.
Right.
Maybe Bergkamp.
Right. So. Of course, Argentina would be Messi and Maradona, but now they got the Pope, so that ruins that
one. Yeah, so yeah.
I think
the Pope had to be third.
Yeah. Yeah, Holland is just... Yeah, it's nothing but players.
Right. There's probably a number of countries around the world that are like that, if you think of it.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. of footballers.
I mean, Brazil.
Ivory Coast.
Ivory Coast, just,
certainly. Your name's Didier. Right.
I dare you to name it another Ivorian.
Yeah,
you
can't. Like, you'll know more about this than me, but wasn't he so respected and well-known instrumental, he basically stopped a war?
Drogba?
Yeah, like, he stopped a civil war by virtue of, like, appealing for...
At least the team did. I don't know. I don't know if he made the appeal, but yeah.
Well, I figured that he has G-O-D in his name, Drogba, right? And, in Harry Potter, to make I Am Lord Voldemort out of Tom Riddle, they give him some outrageous middle name. So we just have to figure out the middle name for Didier Drogba recognize him
as still,
divinity.
Like, when he went into the game...
He just comes into the game.
When he came
game,
as a sub, it was... Yeah. It seriously was like God was coming into the game.
Twice, yeah.
Yeah. And the first game, it worked.
Yeah.
And now Luis Suarez seems to have some kind of pact with the devil. Right? I mean, he has that menace. He's a menacing figure.
Yeah, they went like, do you want football skills or looks? And he thought about it for a while.
Does he have a top lip or is it just nose teeth?
He's almost so attractive. What are you talking about?
I love him. He's an IX player.
Here's a guy with the whole world. I spoke to a guy I love, a guy who's on the People's Game often. He's our Uruguayan correspondent. And he talked about by the way, is there a phrase like hand of God is Maradona, the hand of whatever it was?
That's what he
against Ghana in 2010.
His was hand of baby Jesus.
But, he's hated around the world for that.
Yeah.
Because that was the last African team in the African World Cup and they got eliminated because he got the red card.
Yeah, and he's kind of a and he's aggressive and he's bitten people. He was racist at one point.
You know what's interesting is that my sister lived in Uruguay and I've been there twice and I've noticed that Forlan is still their guy. There's not like a big contention of Suarez.
Really? They're not as big.
I think that they liked when he came in and scored two goals now, but Forlan is like who they love. And I never heard anybody mention.
He's incredible.
He's got the Jesus looks, but.
Yeah.
But, the thing with the Suarez thing is that he had dreamed of playing against Holland because he was still on Ajax.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they love him in Uruguay for that because he was seen as sacrificing. I don't think he was sacrificing anything in the moment he realized he could stop the ball and they weren't going to lose. And he's a great competitive footballer. But he was, of course, then knocked out from the Holland game. But, the thing is that they put him up on their shoulders in the stadium where everyone is rooting for Ghana.
Yeah,
that's just like dancing on people's graves. And that's Luis Suarez.
Yeah, I'm torn on him because I loved him as he was an Ajax player, and he left right after the last World Cup.
You got to wonder because people didn't know how good he was.
One of the most prolific goal scorers in Ajax history.
I know,
which
but you got to wonder
lot.
How that semifinal might have gone had he been there.
Yeah.
Because
people
didn't know how good he was at the time. They didn't make that much of it. But
he just said he plans to retire at Ajax. He said he wants to go back in, I think, 4 years. So he'll still be pretty young.
He actually said some pretty pointed things about his experience in England, feeling disrespected and all after scoring against England yesterday.
And I also just realized the two biggest in soccer, Suarez and Ibrahimovic, both Ajax men.
There we go.
Both Ajax men. What does that say?
Cuddly little Ajax, too.
Yeah.
He has quite the thing with the British media, though, doesn't he? Like Suarez,
Yeah, imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys ever seen the website Jose Mourinho is a Prick?
No.
It just says Jose Mourinho was born. They give his birth date. He is a prick. That's the whole page.
It's great.
The 2014 World Cup goals are just flying in like crazy. Did you expect it like this, guys, or did you expect something just suffocating like 2010?
Yeah, not this open. I didn't think it was going to be this open. I thought you'd have the expected teams would play open of like Holland and France and Germany and Argentina.
Well, Holland defined the moment of suffocation in 2010.
I know. Mm-hmm. It was. Yeah. I hated it.
I feel like
I hated it so much.
Young should wear full medieval armor.
Yeah. I like that now playing under Van Hall, he's actually playing attractive soccer. Right. Well, I mean, he's still aggressive, but he's not. I mean, there were some ruthless plays, and I was just thinking, is he really this guy, or is it just because he's next to Van Bommel? Because I can't stand Van Bommel. Right. I don't think
that much like a Nazi general.
So. Yeah, seriously, I don't think
he sounds like a maneuver.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. The Van Bommel, which it could be. That's putting your heel on the top.
But
of
he
someone's
was in charge
foot.
Of North. He was in charge of North Africa, right?
Yeah, Van Bommel.
Well, we're actually what?
He was the worst.
We're 99 years and 358 days away from today, the anniversary of the beginning of World War I, right?
Oh,
so
wow.
In a few days, it'll be the 100th anniversary of the guy getting popped in Sarajevo. So if the Germans had only done a Van Bommel
maneuver. Yeah.
Through Belgium. Yeah.
Yeah, who knows where we'd be.
Is Archduke playing tomorrow? Like how?
What's that? Do you guys know Van Bommel?
No.
He was, I mean, illustrious career, Barcelona, Bayern.
We just made him up.
PSV. Yeah, that would, how great would that be?
He's just Kaiser Sosa.
We just keep going.
He's 9
he was also a
quarter
lizard
made of fire.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty cool.
Have you ever seen a lizard with fire feet?
Van Bommel has.
So
crossing Game of Thrones with the World Cup 2014.
So they
call him the mountain that rides, correct?
So the Dutch have always been this all-out attack team since the 70s, okay? And then in 2008, amazing attacking team in the Euros, coached by Van Basten. and they lost to a Russian team in the quarterfinals, coached by a Dutch coach who just out-tacticked him, right. If that's a word. And after just crushing Italy and France in the group play, and they said, okay, maybe we want a more practical coach. So they hire this guy, Bert-Van Marwijk, and his daughter is married to Mark Van Bommel. Who is, I mean,
she's a lucky woman.
He really, yeah, yeah.
9 foot tall.
Yeah, 9 foot tall, feet of fire, face of lizard.
And beak of steel.
Yeah, but
this guy sounds great.
Van Marwijk is this really practical guy who abandoned the Dutch style.
And flow chart for
and
this.
He played this really defensive, just kind of contain and counter when you can kind of play. And he kept Van Bommel in, even through the last Euros, right? Mm. Didn't he play through
well,
the
Well, they
last?
Lost every game in the last
yeah.
Euros.
Oh, no, you know what? He retired before the Euros, but he insisted on keeping that formation.
That's why they ended
4-2-3-1.
Up in Spain's divisions, because they got ranked
yeah.
so low.
Because of the Euros, right, they lowered
three,
them, yeah.
Three losses in a major
yeah.
tournament.
And they've only had four losses in the past 4 years.
Yeah, right, but three those losses Euros, and you plummet. Yeah.
Did you say you hated the fact that they beat Spain that bad, or were you talking about something
no,
else?
No, I love it. That was the best thing ever. No, I hated the way they played in 2010.
Okay.
Because, I mean...
They just closed down
they
the
got
game.
Second place, but if they had an attack-minded coach, I mean, I think they would have just run away with the tournament.
Well, Ian Robin, wow. First of all, I see the guy, and I have no evidence of this, and there's zero evidence, I'm sure, more than any other player. But, you know, he was so injured throughout much of his career. Mm-hmm. He runs like he's grandpa. And yet he's super fast and he's super ripped.
Mm-hmm.
And you know his name begins with R, so I think he's on roids. I mean, yeah. I just think like Robin's on roids.
Did you see he broke the land speed record? In the Spain game on his second goal, he was sprinting at 23 miles per hour, which is the fastest anyone's ever been clocked on a soccer field.
Rob, you're kidding me.
No.
So yes for the roids. This is Ben Johnson.
He broke it by a mile and a half. Per hour.
But I mean, remember the first part of his career, he was brilliant, but he was always injured.
He was always injured.
And he was injured going into 2010.
I thought Van Persie was supposed to be injured right now.
Actually, you know, I think
Van Persie is recovering from a groin injury, but he's fine.
Okay. Yeah. And he's clearly fine.
But I think Robin, you know, obviously he gets a bad rap because he's considered a selfish player by many of his generations of teammates on certain teams that he's been on, not passing the ball, just keeping it on his foot till he shoots. But I think after Suarez, Messi, and Ronaldo, he's the most potent.
I was gonna ask that because I can't watch him and not think that he should be at least in the conversation.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he was, second? No, he was third in Ballon d'Or years ago.
Right.
And yeah, I think even the year before that, yeah. I mean, if Messi and Ronaldo didn't exist, he'd have one by now.
Well, in a way.
Or Xavi.
Holland, the thing is Casillas, who's now the worst goaltender in the world,
yeah.
Made a save, the end of his toe
from
Holland winning the World Cup on a Robin goal.
Hurts. Still hurts.
Oh. I have a friend in San Francisco who plays competitive soccer on the weekends, and if the goalie messes up, everyone yells Casillas at them. And that's after, you know, he's been on a bad streak for... Like a little bit.
The championship game of the European Champions League, the goal that was let in that had them behind for most of the match was really Casillas' bad goaltending position.
So maybe he lost confidence or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It worked out for him last World Cup. Remember, he gave up the goal against Switzerland, one of the two, and they blamed it on his girlfriend being behind the net.
Yeah. How crazy was that?
Spain scored 8 goals in 7 matches to win the World Cup last time. That's 3 fewer goals than any champion. And some of those teams played 3 fewer games in Spain. That's how
Holland has 8 in 2 games.
Yeah, right.
We were saying the Golden Boot last year was 5.
Right.
Yeah. Benzema should have 5 right now.
Yeah, he's right around there, and Müller will probably have 7 by tomorrow. So
yeah.
So
can I give one more Robin fact real quick?
Okay.
Robin fact.
He missed that breakaway in 2010. He missed a penalty in a Champions League final.
Right.
And he was labeled a choker. Ever since then, he's had 5 goals in championship games.
Including the winning one last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So he's completely turned it around.
Well, he's incredible. And again, on the regimen of roids, he should be around for the next World Cup.
Is that tested by FIFA?
I'm sure it is. They definitely get tested.
I'm sure it is. He's just, he is so skinny. It's crazy. I think he's just one of those fast freaks who... He doesn't play Dutch at all. He was so selfish. Cruyff loves him. He said,
Cruyff loves him.
Yeah, Cruyff loves him. He said something about, you know, you want 11 total footballers. Now he said, you want 10 total footballers and someone with a left foot who likes to dribble.
Right, there we go. I mean, you know, I think the thing, I sort of thought Barcelona and maybe Spain to some extent, they sort of went to madness with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at why Spain is so much weaker, I mean, Puyol was in the middle, but Ramos was out on the left. So what you have on the left now is Jordi Alba, mm-hmm. who's, you know, tiny. Mm-hmm. And, of course, so he's actually the guy who's there instead of Puyol. So they've just gone so small mm-hmm. and so tiki-taka. And Barcelona did as well. It's sort of like, you know, you have a brilliant thing and then you take it to insanity.
Right, yeah. right.
And I think the counterattack football was winning in the European Championships. Well, this is not comedy. This is soccer theory. But this is a big part of the game now is the tactics have become very...
You have to evolve. Right? You have to evolve. I mean, look, Holland came up with that method. They don't play a strict 4-3-3. They go in and out. I mean, even look at Van Gaal when he led Ajax, they played a 3-3-1-3.
Mm-hmm.
But they still played that style. You don't have to play it so religiously, like you said.
I thought England, though, this time around, and this was more picked apart by Italy, they seemed to be hurting themselves because they had these egos that had to play. They had these stars who had to be on the field, and they didn't go about it mm-hmm. by, you know, tactically aligning themselves in all the adequate ways. So you had Italy just pick them apart down that one wing because mm-hmm. that was where Wayne Rooney, who was a, you know, he's a striker, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden he's playing midfield on the left, and they're just like, you know, Andrea Pirlo.
Yeah.
Who I think actually, as opposed to like medieval armor, should have a professor's table.
at the field. Nice robe.
So he saw that and they just attacked down the right wing, open space all day long. Wayne Rooney's not going to get there.
Yeah. England felt like France 4 years ago and Holland 2 years ago, where it's a bunch of players. No team.
Except Rooney didn't headbutt anybody.
Well, the French were headbutting each other 4 years ago.
Who was it? Hang on, which team was it that where there was like a headbutting fight between players on the team after a loss?
After when was that?
This tournament. Was it Colombia or...
No, at halftime of the Costa Rica-Italy game, there was a little...
Wait, are you...
Was it Costa Rica?
Baby tussle. After... post-game, I don't know. Right.
There was today. And we can get into Costa
Rica. This was last week. Mm-hmm. There was a... I can't remember which team it was. One of the teams that was basically... There was nearly a fight broke out between two players.
Oh, no,
there
was Cameroon. Cameroon.
That was Cameroon, okay.
Yeah, Cameroon.
Two players, who they were losing, and I don't know what happened, but the camera sort of picked them up. Basically, one tried to headbutt the other, and their teammates pulled them apart.
Jeez.
Oh, I didn't see
Not
that.
A good month for Cameroon.
No, yeah, they got to stay good.
They boycott. They were going to boycott. Did you know they didn't get paid at first, and they refused to get on their flight?
Really?
Yeah.
And then was it one of those ones like Argo style, where they just running up with a briefcase full of money at the last minute? Plane's going to take off without them?
Right. I don't even know. Did they end up getting paid, or did they just go, come on, guys?
I miss North Korea.
Did those players, once they were knocked out, did they survive? Like, did anyone follow them up afterwards to see if they still...
Seriously, I don't know.
Because it's one of those ones where, like, I would be... I don't even know what you do in that situation when you're that good a soccer player and you get sent... You're going, like, you're going to the World Cup. Part of you would be like, yay! Another part of you would be like, oh, no. Like, what happens if we... don't win, which we are definitely not going to do because it's North Korea against the best
players. I don't know if you heard this, but they, on their media, won this World Cup.
There was actually some internet video where you just cut it up so it looked like North Korea.
They actually won the double World Cup, according to their media.
Ooh. And you'll never guess who their star striker was.
Kim Jong-il's ghost.
Your thoughts on Qatar 2022?
If it happens.
If it happens, it'll be very...
I mean, it's probably going to happen just because I... like
FIFA won't turn back.
No, they won't. They're so stubbornly pig-headed, too much at stake for them and their own imagined status and everything. It's almost certainly going to end up in Qatar. But I don't know how they're going to do it. Are they going to somehow air-condition the stadiums?
They said they could do that in the bid, and then they said, oh, our bad. You can't do that. We can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder whether they could like even do at least do like a fine mist of water over the stadium. Right. You know the way, you know, like sometimes that Mediterranean style air conditioning centers go to where it's like the outdoor patio and they've just got this fine mist of water that's being sprayed
they
over.
They puncture holes in hoses.
Yeah. But even like even without that, there's also just the horrendous human rights abuses that are constantly going. Like, slave labor is building those venues, and people are dying.
Well, Russia's next. They're peachy.
Yeah. but when they were called out on the slave labor, at first they denied it, and then when they said, oh, you know, all these people are dying, and they're all migrant workers who really can't leave, and they're like, oh, our bad, we won't do that anymore.
Oh, you guys probably hate the pyramids too. Those are pretty nice,
right? No, I don't know. Ever since it was awarded, I just said it's going to be stripped. Like, there's no way. Everyone knew it was bribery.
Well, there's a guy from the Qatar on the board at FIFA, right?
Yeah.
None of them are ever supposed to happen. Brazil is supposed to be a nightmare. It's supposed to be a nightmare for the Olympics. They're in the water over there where the sailing is supposed to be. There's just raw sewage and dead bodies. They found, like, 5 dead bodies when they were like, the environment here is so bad. Oh, there's a person.
Jeez. I did not even know that.
Yeah, they're still protesting the 2016 Olympics there because it's like...
Yeah.
I don't know if you know about... Maybe you should see City of God.
Yeah, I've seen City of God. I've seen that.
Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious 7?
The one with Brazil.
Yeah, Rio Drift.
Where there's one guy who controls the crime in Rio.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have to say about the Brazilian World Cup is, you know, I don't think the crowds look like the club football fans from the towns that are that come to the matches every week in Brazil. It's a different audience. One about, you know, many, many pay scales above the conventional Brazilian fan base. I mean, you have one town in there, I think Salvador, the population is about 90% African Brazilian, different people attending the games than the locals.
Do you think Qatar will happen?
I don't know. I can't imagine it, but I can only imagine that it will because FIFA is exactly as you said, Matt. You know,
but when UEFA is completely against it at this point.
UEFA, you mean?
Yeah.
Europeans? Yeah. Well, you know, they talked about having it in winter, but I don't really see the, you know, massive club sides, you know, which are corporations as large as FIFA, you know, willing to pull up their season. Yeah.
You'd have to change two seasons. You'd have to change the one before and after. I mean, didn't Platini just say he said last week that there needs to be a revote if there's corruption? The Dutch president, I think the FA president said that too, and I'm sure Sunil Gulati would say it because they want the U.S. Bid. And
yeah, what were the bids that U.S. was one of them?
U.S.
Right?
was number two,
right? Obama was pushing for it, right?
But then also something like the U.S. where they already have the venues,
yeah.
Like well,
all you gotta do is show up here. Just show up.
Yeah, but
we build some
FIFA
stuff.
Yeah. They want to make the infrastructure money. Yeah.
Well, there was a precedent. I suppose the 86 World Cup in Mexico was supposed to be in a South American country, right?
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have changed it like last Mexico. Second.
Oh, wow. Well, do you know what country?
I think it was Brazil.
Huh. Yeah.
We here on the People's Game will ask our ombudsman to fact check that. So dare we do this now? We're talking on the 20th of June. Right at the summer solstice. We're 10 days only into the 31-day tournament. I think it's actually the 9th day only. Your thoughts on the tournament going forward?
Well, I at the start of the tournament, my pick/prediction was Spain. So my value is... I am of no value to this discussion.
Well, let me confess. We have a 3-part series on the website Truth Dig, and the first two have been published, and the third one is coming out. We originally thought they would all be published right at the start, but they decided to break it into 3 articles because it was in 3 parts. The final section included predictions. Mm-hmm. Mine was Spain.
Mm.
Yeah. That's not going to be printed now.
Yeah.
It's the only place it'll be on record. So.
Yeah.
And I will be editing it out.
Yeah, I misspoke on the previous show. I said I had Holland Argentina in the final, but it's Holland Argentina in the semifinal on the right bracket, Germany and Brazil in the left bracket. But now I don't know if Brazil makes it to the semifinal.
They seem kind of overrated. This Fred guy's not doing much, and
this Fred guy sounds hilarious. It sounds like a guy on your company team.
Yeah. Well, they have. I mean, that
who's this Fred guy that screwed up the paperwork?
Yeah.
They have Hulk also. That's my favorite. But yeah, they seem... I think that they had to score on Mexico for me to be convinced, even though Ochoa played the game of his life. I think the Netherlands seem basically unbeatable. Germany seems basically unbeatable. and
France is going to be worth a look after France, what happened today.
Which bracket will France be in?
That's down the ways in the groups that seem so weak at the top of the tournament that I never considered
right.
it. I'm so alert to the fact that Brazil's going to play either Chile or the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And, so Brazil could conceivably be out.
Yeah, I think both look better than Brazil.
I would take Brazil over Chile going into that match just because of the tradition of them playing and all of that weight. But the Netherlands, and it'll be Chile-Netherlands, though I don't necessarily take the Netherlands.
No one's saying Belgium? That used
I think
to be
it's going to be
choice.
A draw, honestly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the Chile-Netherlands game is going to be a draw. Holland always plays conservatively in the third group game.
And, well, they have the goal difference, right?
Yeah.
So it would then be Chile versus Brazil. Assuming Brazil beats Cameroon, which is probably good this is good as any assumption at this point.
Yeah. France looks great.
I always look at the tournament through the lens of Italy because that's my side. Mm-hmm. And, going into today, I was confident. And right off the top of this match, I just didn't think they were going to beat Costa Rica. I thought Costa Rica just looked solid, athletic, with a fantastic goaltender. He's considered one of the best goaltenders in the world already.
Yeah.
He looks rock solid. I don't see them going deep in the tournament, but yeah.
They were so confident.
Yeah.
It's crazy how confident Costa Rica was. I was not expecting that.
Right. Well, again, 4 million people.
Yeah.
You know, and no great soccer tradition before. And I don't know anything about their soccer tradition, except they always were like third in CONCACAF and make the tournament and get wiped out.
Yeah, I would just see their qualification games against the U.S. and think, they're scrappy.
Well, you know that the U.S. gained 3 points in CONCACAF that Costa Rica protested vehemently because it was in the snow in Columbus. It was a ridiculous match. The ball would roll and stop.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're both playing the same conditions. Like, how can you protest?
Yeah, but you're the Costa Ricans.
right.
Versus guys who grew up in New England.
Yeah, you're still playing the same, you're playing at a higher elevation.
I wonder what happens if it does happen in Qatar, where they're going to have to bring people out to a desert camp for training
They really will.
They have to do it.
With Van Bommel.
You're right.
He's excellent in those conditions.
They would have to do some kind of acclimatization. You'd have to spend a good couple of months training in a desert environment to be able to even begin to get used to that kind of situation.
Yeah. It's so funny because the photos of the artist renderings of the buildings that they're going to be building for the 2020 World Cup look insanely amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in...
like, not even possible.
Right. Yeah. That looks like a spaceship, guys.
Yeah,
that's what's going to happen. It's going to be the one venue, and we fly it from city to city.
Yeah. That's great.
After the game, it lifts up, and it moves on to the next
place. Who pilots it, Van Bommel?
This is something we talk a lot about, the People's Game, and you are the soccer comics, not the architect comics. But, I mean, aren't these stadiums, they just look like, rubber stamps. There's almost nothing architecturally in Brazil,
Well, they're going to look like grown over with weeds in about 2 months.
Yeah.
That little happy blue graphic thing in the stadium, I don't care for that either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the stadiums look like they were building 4 different stadiums and then they just kind of came together. Like they were like, this side's going to be this side's going to be that. And there was one yesterday it definitely looked like they just had some extra stadium parts and they just shoved them together.
Well, they got it from like a stadium that's gone out of business.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
One of those kitchens.
We got a left side. You got a right side over there? Yeah.
Well, and also in Qatar, of course, they'll look incredible and they'll be like, this is actually where about 121 workers are buried in the cement in this one. And that one.
Only 8 died in Brazil.
Yeah. Only 8?
Yeah.
And
just,
it was just
the 8.
Man.
Well, look, Soccer Comics, thank you so much again.
If you guys want to give out
your information so people can follow you. And are any of you tweeting the World Cup?
I haven't bothered that.
Maybe one every 5 days.
Something occurs to me.
Yeah.
I tweet every so often. Yeah. Follow me on Twitter, @ Matt Kirshen.
I'm at Brighto. I'm on Twitter. Yeah.
I'm at RC Comedy.
What a terrible
and,
handle.
Your names again.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I'm Mike Bridenstine.
Ryan Connor.
And Matt Kirshen.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Had some great laughs from the Soccer Comics. Well, that's it for today's show. Thanks to co-host Alan Minsky, performance artist Karen Enzoategi, and KPFK's own DJ Namdi. You can find all our podcasts, archived shows, and other content at thepeoplesgame.org. Like us on Facebook at The People's Game, and follow us on Twitter at PeoplesGame2014. We've also just created a Tumblr where you can find out more about the radical history of soccer at peoplesgame2014.tumblr.com. Thanks, sigue la lucha, and Aproveche o jogo bonito.